Hello, welcome to episode 80 of the Extra Sequential comic book and manga and graphic novel podcast, hosted intercontinentally from Melbourne and Perth by myself, Mladen, and my poor co-host Chris. How you going, Chris?
I'm good. In what way am I poor?
You're just in general. You're
financially?
A terrible human being. How you been?
I'm not good now. No, I'm good. I'm good. I was telling you earlier that I've got a couple of comic speaking opportunities. So one will possibly be at the a convention in Perth in the coming months, and another one will be next week at the Fremantle Library to speak to a bunch of librarians about comics. And I must give a high five, thumbs up to my good buddy Keith at Quality Comics, who recommended me for the gig being an unpaid gig. But, you know, nevertheless, I'm always happy to meet new people and yak on about comics because I don't do it enough with you.
So is this like a Senate subcommittee hearing about the moral decay in comics, or is this a real thing?
I don't know if there's going to be, like, people wearing hats indoors and black and white footage, but no, it's just recommending what comics to buy for adults, for the librarians, and what not to buy.
Fantastic. This isn't open to the public, is it, Chris? Because
no.
Hecklers
are
not welcome.
I'll let you know how it goes.
Yes, and we have this con to look forward to as well. I'm sure you'll announce it once it's all properly confirmed, not just speculation. Won't mention any names until then. So what is the topic this week? What is the comic book topic?
I don't know what the topic in a handy nutshell, hello, this is me in a nutshell, would be, but we are discussing Outsiders, not Batman and the Outsiders, not that comic title, but people that come in to write comics from another realm, another discipline. So whether it be screenwriters or novelists or playwrights, people that are flicking over to the other side writing comics. So people that have or currently are or will do in the future. And there's quite a laundry list of people that go between the different media.
That's right. And it's been interesting to see the kind of mix of sort of screenwriters, celebrities, and people who are being lured to writing comics, especially over the last few years. So I'm looking forward to talking about those later in the show. Have you been reading any interesting comics this week, Chris? I'm curious.
I watched a couple of movies. I saw The Grey, the Liam Neeson versus Wolves movie that isn't as action-packed as the trailer may lead you to believe, but it's quite a good kind of...
How many scenes of him punching wolves are there?
None. There, I said it. It's out there.
Spoilers.
Oh, no, there might be a brief one, but it's a more of a kind of a look at faith and death and life, and yeah, it's quite good. I also saw Chronicle, which is the three kids get superpowers, and it's kind of very Akira-like, but yeah, that was slightly disappointing. But I did read this week from Septagon Studios, Archaeologists of Shadows, which is only $1, and it's a kind of it's good sci-fi, fantasy, steampunky kind of digital manipulated art. And that's a digital release, so that's called Archaeologists of Shadows. But yeah, my review of that will be up at Broken Frontier probably next week. But yeah, that was a pretty good comic. But that's about me done. What about yourself? What has been distracting you over the last week?
So much. I've probably been wasting my time reading too many comics. Recently, I got the chance to read Max Allan Collins' Road to Perdition. Comic which was eventually turned into a film starring Tom Hanks and I believe the last film role for Paul Newman, the salad dressing man, as he's known.
And an ugly Jude Law as well, I believe.
That's right. He shaved his head like so he looked like he was balding, like George Costanza. It's worth noting, like in the book, I guess the character relationships are a lot more developed in the film. The book's more more action, which didn't surprise me, knowing Collins was also the writer for the Dick Tracy newspaper comic strip until recently. And it's kind of an homage, he says, to Lone Wolf and Cub. So if that puts it in a perspective for you, it's very gangster action pulp, very violent. So
And there's two sequels to that, I believe, as well.
It ends pretty abruptly, that's for sure. So I can see how it opens up to a sequel. It's well worth reading, I mean, as a little gangster noir piece. But that might be the first case I've ever read a comic and go, you know, the film's better.
Okay.
not to say the comic isn't good, but the film just has more depth to it in a good way. I'm happy to just not talk about the other comics I read and get into the comic book news.
So, news, Mladen, as you and some of our listeners may be aware, it was my birthday a few days ago.
Happy birthday.
And last week we were talking about unfinished business or unfinished products or projects. Was that last week or the week before? Who knows? And I mentioned Daredevil End of Days, and which was going to be one of Marvel's kind of end series that looks at the future of some of their superheroes. And David Mack on his Facebook page, who was one of the artists of and writers, said he's currently working on it. So I thought, oh, that's good. And he also wished me a happy birthday. Wasn't that nice of him?
Oh, that's sweet.
And he said, oh, I'll see you in June. So I said, oh, he's coming to Supernova. So that's pretty cool. So, yeah, I've interviewed him a couple of times and saw him at Comic-Con. So that's pretty good. I did want to mention The Simpsons. They've had their 500th episode, I believe, this week. And in related to the comics, they've had their new logos for the whole line. And there's also a new series coming in April from Bongo Comics, which is Bart Simpson's Pal Milhouse, co-written by none other than Gail Simone, the current Batgirl writer. So they get some pretty good writers, the Simpsons comics. So, yeah, Milhouse gets his own comic. I don't know how awesome that'll be, but nevertheless, I thought it was pretty interesting. It is also this year the 35th anniversary of 2000 AD. It debuted in February of 1977, and they're running a whole bunch of competitions on 2000adonline.com if you're a fan of Judge Dredd and Rogue Trooper and other, I don't know, I haven't read 2000 AD in years, but I would
Thugs,
like to.
Future Shocks, Ace Trucking Co., I think. Yeah, lots of good titles there. Do you win prizes? Is this a thing?
It is this for, yeah, well, during the next week or so, yes, you can, if you log on to 2000adonline.com, you can indeed win some prizes.
Please enter on behalf of us and send any prizes you receive to extrasequential.com.
There's just a new magazine called Rations, Rations Magazine. They have released two issues so far, and they're both free. The second one has just been released. It's 99 pages, and it's got a whole bunch of interviews and articles and reviews, such as Why Star Trek Deep Space Nine is the Best of the Franchise. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that. And also an interview with Eddie Dayton, who I think we might have had him on our show.
Yes.
A while ago from UK publisher com.x, so, or comics. So, yeah, it's, I'm very, for those of you who are aware of the extra sequential history, there's we've done a couple of issues of an online magazine about 2-3 years ago, so I'm always encouraged. And it's pretty good. You can download it as a free PDF. So that's called Rations, and we'll put links on the site. Lastly, Morgan Spurlock from the documentary maker, Super Size Me, the greatest film ever sold, a few other documentaries. His Comic-Con film, the trailer's just been released. It's called Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope, and the film is actually released on April 6th, and the trailer has just been released. Yeah, it looks kind of interesting, but I'll reserve judgment until I see the film. So basically, it's just a documentary on San Diego Comic-Con and the awesomeness contained therein.
Fantastic. I mean, yeah, I'm curious to see how this film turns out. He's got a particular style to editing and presenting his films, but hopefully it's... See, I've never been to one of these cons, so it'll be eye-opening for me, whereas from your point of view, maybe you'll be more critical of it, having been there and knowing the ins and outs.
Yeah, I loved it, you know. I think if you're as much as a geek as us, I mean... Just definitely go, but yeah, especially coming from Australia, it is a fairly expensive trip. But I mean, the trailer certainly says that he's going to, you know, deal with it with the respect. He's not like mocking it or whatever as some mainstream press can do. So I'm actually curious to see this film. But
there's a few dockers coming out in a similar vein. There's the one which is coming out being filmed in the Center for Comics Art Studies, which is where Chris Ware and others lecture and bring up the next generation of kind of fine arts, alternative comic writers and artists. And that was being filmed during, I think, over the course of a couple of years' study for some of the students. So it'd be fun to see the inner workings of... You have to wonder if it's a pretentious, you know, art school, or if it's a bit more fun and breezy, or if it's just one of those degrees that your parents really are disappointed that you're wasting time and money on.
Yeah.
So this last item here isn't a news item per se, because it's no longer, well, it is news. the internet has this thing of if it's not happening right now, it's not news. No, this is news because it happened like last week, okay? It's news. Nate Simpson's Non-Player, which was being the first issue came out from Image Comics in April of last year, has been acquired from Warner Brothers. I think we talked about Non-Player in a previous show.
But, we did?
Yeah, and the comic's about the intersection of like an augmented reality video game, which is like a World of Warcraft from a future world, with the day-to-day life within this, you know, future. I don't know if it's a dystopia. We haven't seen enough of the comic yet, but the first issue was a huge hit and sold out. It went to second printing, I believe. That sold out as well, and we've not seen any issues since. So on one hand, the film is exciting news. On the other, I think this might mean we won't see any more issues of the comic. But the film's being they're aiming to make it a major studio release. They've got the producers of the recent Harry Potter films involved. So it look to this one in a few years' time, possibly in 3D. I would be surprised if they didn't try and make this in 3D. But Nate Simpson is an interesting case because this was the first comic he ever wrote. He was actually a complete newcomer to comics. He'd worked primarily in video game design, and it shows in his in the look of the comic. But here's an example of this feature topic where it was, say, a complete success. I mean, we both enjoyed this comic, I believe.
Yeah, I believe that you believe that that is correct. Yes, I did.
But unlike some of the others we're about to talk about, like most likely, success does not await. This topic filled me with trepidation, Chris. It's fair to say many of the... Well, I'm curious to see how our list differ because what you suggested, it tells me you've probably got some sterling success stories to tell me.
Correct.
Whereas many of mine are disappointing phrase into comic writing, which strike of cynical self-marketing on the hand of some of these people.
All right, well, shall I kick off then so we can start on a good note?
Yeah, please.
And then we'll get to your muck raking later. But I did want to mention Michael Green and Mark Guggenheim.
Mm-hmm.
Often they work together, but they have done stuff separately. They have worked on film, TV, and comics, though they haven't really done any comics as of late. Michael Green solo has done the King's TV series, which I don't think we ever got aired here, but that was sort of like the old...
I believe that starred... that starred Thingo from, not Torchwood, but the other one, Deadwood, starred Michael...
Ian McShane.
Ian McShane,
yes.
Sorry, yeah, from Deadwood as some kind of priest or a pope or something. And we never got to see this
one.
It was like a Vatican future dystopia, from what I understand, like a fantasy world.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Mark Guggenheim, he's actually done the, most recently, the pilot for Arrow, the Green Arrow pilot. So he's written the pilot for that, which I should say has just cast Black Canary as well as Merlin or the alter egos thereof. And both worked together on the Green Lantern screenplay. and they've also both worked together on some pretty good issues, actually, of Superman Batman a couple of years ago. Michael Green has also written a few issues of Batman Confidential, I think the Lovers and Madmen.
That's right, arc. Back in 2008 with art by Dennis Cowan, who some might recognise from Lobo.
That was a Joker kind of centred story or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, Batman Confidential came out kind of to replace Legends of the Dark
Gotham
Knight
Central?
In terms of, in terms of the approach to it. It was kind of non-canon stories, and they rewrote the origin, so people hated it, of course, because people hate stuff that's different. But yeah, I had Michael Green on my list as well. I believe he wrote for the TV show Heroes at the time. He was fairly hot on that show.
Yeah, Heroes and Lost. I've got a whole section on writers of Lost who are now working on comics. But yeah, Heroes and Lost had quite a fair bit of crossover. And Mark Guggenheim, he's the co-creator of Eli Stone. And he also wrote the X-Men Origins Wolverine video game. And he also wrote Spider-Man for a while and the Flash comic for DC. And he actually killed Bart Allen, controversially. But both the pair of them haven't done any comics work for a while. But I think most of these writers, it's interesting, they kind of, they wear their pop culture and their superhero love on their sleeve. So I guess that perhaps gets them work with Marvel and DC. Like you all often find that these people on our list, well, especially my list, work for Marvel and DC rather than independent stuff. They often work with superheroes and licensed existing properties rather than create their own stuff.
I suppose it makes sense given they have an in, say, if they've worked with Warner Brothers for their various TV shows. I'm sure it's all slightly interconnected. Warner Brothers might try and send one of their writers over to DC to get some cross-promotion happening.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the comics are still maybe oblique, I guess, on the film studio's eye. So I think it's just people bringing an existing audience with them as well, especially novelists. You know, they've brought up a name, like we'll get to people like Brad Meltzer later, David Liss, people that have actually got an audience built in, and then they, when they write to comics, hopefully they'll bring a new audience of regular novel readers but new comics readers with them. I don't know how successful that is, but you'd think that would work that way. I did want to mention Kevin Smith briefly. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention him. We talked about him a lot last week. But Kevin Smith is obviously the writer-director of Clerks and Mallrats, Chasing Amy, upcoming Red State, a whole bunch of stuff. He's been writing comics for years and years. We obviously know that he owns his comic store. The new reality TV show launched a couple of weeks ago, but he started to write Clerks comics, Blunt Man and Chronic, which is his Batman and Robin ripoff, and he's done Daredevil, he's done Green Arrow, he's done Batman, White and Gaia, so he's done a fair few comics over the years, though again, nothing in the last year or so. But yeah, that's enough about Kevin Smith. Give me one of your lists there, Mladen.
Well, I guess in a similar realm of popularity with nerds is Joss Whedon. Is it pronounced Josh or Joss? Yeah.
Joss.
And, I mean, he came to writing comics after writing for television, and he's a special case like Kevin Smith in that he's a longtime comics fan, which you probably couldn't say about a lot of the writers on that we're going to talk about tonight. But he's written Frey, Buffy, Serenity, so like spin-offs of these TV shows, and Angel as well.
Yes.
But also for Astonishing X-Men, and he took over from Brian K. Vaughan for Runaways for the second part of that series as well for Marvel. And now he's come full circle in that he's directing the Avengers movie, which I was thinking makes it the first time that a comic book writer has directed a comic book film, unless if any others come to mind.
Interesting. This requires further research, this bold claim of yours that you have just thrown onto the table. I mean, a feast before my eyes. I can see the glint and the drool moistening my lips.
Shut up. But he's a case where I think his comics have been very well received. The ones I've seen are quite well written. He has a sense for storytelling that carries over nicely from his TV writing into comics. And that's the case with a lot of these guys. Maybe they're not so experimental in terms of comic book storytelling conventions, but they do tell, I guess, cinematically satisfying stories. They use the language of TV and cinema to the best effect in their comics.
Yeah, and I think Joss Whedon was on my list as well. Yeah, Frey, I believe, which is the future set kind of Buffy miniseries starting in 2001. That was the first comic I believe he wrote, and then he incorporated some of that into the actual TV series. And obviously without his help, the official season 8, which is the official continuation by Dark Horse, which has been hugely successful for them, they brought in a lot of new people. He and a lot of his co-writers on the TV series he kind of brought with him, and the same thing happened with IDW, and they continued Angel and Spike in comics form as well. And the same, I think there's been 2 Serenity miniseries based on the TV series as well. So he's either writing them or co-writing himself or kind of overseeing them, because obviously he's a busy man. But, Joss Whedon, Astonishing X-Men was really good. He wrote that for 2 years. And it's actually just been released, a few months ago it was released as a pretty good motion comic. So motion comics are pretty good. So, if you could get a hold of Astonishing X-Men, it's very obvious his love of characters like Colossus, who he brought back from the dead, Kitty Pryde, who is he's always liked Kitty Pryde, and he's obviously been the creator of Buffy. He got a strong feeling for strong female characters. So, Joss Whedon is one of the good guys. You know, he's got a lot of geek love because he's a good ambassador for comics.
Well, I believe I read that when he was, reading X-Men comics back in the, late 80s, around the Chris Claremont time, he was a huge fan of Kitty Pryde and the way she was characterized, and that fed into the way he wrote for Buffy. So it's nice to see he's given something back.
Yes, indeed. I did want to mention, since you brought up Buffy, Jane Espenson, who was one of the original TV series writers. She wrote, I think she's on Buffy for the TV show for about 5 years. She's also wrote an episode of Game of Thrones. She was on the writing staff for Torchwood. She's now on the Once Upon a Time TV series, which I've never watched. But yeah, she's also, as I said, writing the Buffy season 8 comic as well, which is pretty good. And quite a few others are actually writing on the Buffy season 8. Well, I wanted to talk about Lost. Lost has actually got a pretty interesting pedigree, I guess, when it comes to breeding comics writers. So the Lost TV series, which I kind of lost interest in after season 2. Hey! So a lot of the co-creators and writers on that show went to work in comics. So Brian K. Vaughan, he was on seasons 3 to 5 of Lost. So he wrote Ex Machina, Why the Last Man, who I know you've both read. I haven't. Pride of Baghdad, which is awesome, and I think we talked about in our Talking Animals Anthropomorphic episode. So, he wrote for Lost as well as a whole bunch of other comics. Damon Lindelof, he was on Lost as well, and he co-created the series, I believe. He also co-wrote the Star Trek film, 2009, and the Cowboys and Aliens film, starring Indiana Jones and James Bond. And he also wrote, I think this is the only comic series that he wrote for Marvel, which was the 6-issue miniseries, Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk. And that's the famous one from a few years ago where Hulk, and I'm not spoiling it here, rips Wolverine in half, because that was used in all the promo pictures and stuff, and it was a pretty good series. Drew Goddard, another Lost writer, he also wrote Cloverfield, the found footage monster film from a few years ago, and The Cabin in the Woods with Josh Whedon, which is a horror film said to be released this year. And he's also written a few comics, such as Tales of the Vampire, which was a Buffy anthology, I believe, and 3 issues of Buffy Season 8. And lastly, Jeff Loeb. He was on Lost for a while, as well as Smallville. He wrote the first few issues of Superman Batman. He's written Hulk, and he did a whole bunch of the Tim Sale color books, you know, Captain America White, which never came out, Spider-Man Blue, Hulk Grey, etc. And is currently working back on TV for the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon. So there you go. So Lost has done pretty well, as in breeding comics writers. Not literally breeding. I don't want to give the impression that there's some kind of orgy in the writer's room. But, yeah, it's good to see.
Well, Jeff Loeb's a curious case. He started first with screenwriting, didn't he, back in the late 80s?
Who could forget Commando and your favourite film of all time?
Why do you always think it's my favourite? I've never seen it the whole way through, you know. We're talking about Teen Wolf 2, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I've never seen that film. I just assume it could be amazing. It could be amazing. It could be the Citizen Kane of Teen Wolf movies. But what year was it when he wrote Long Halloween? Because that was kind of his...
Oh, that would have been late 90s, maybe 96, 97, something like that.
That feels right, because that was the first time I remember noticing him as a comics writer. I mean, before fairly faceless, and as you mentioned, Superman, Batman. But he sort of jumps back and forth a lot, but he does kind of like to work with heroic properties, as in, you know, licenses and TV properties and that sort of thing. It's his bag, yes. I guess. He's never going to write for Ally McBeal or anything like that.
No. I did want to mention Rob, and I'll probably pronounce his name incorrectly, but I've got 2 playwrights on my list. One is Robert Aguayo-Sacasa. He's written for Glee. I know you like Glee. Do you? I don't think so. And Big Love. He's written a whole bunch of plays as well. And he also wrote, he worked for Marvel for a few years. He wrote Sensational Spider-Man. He wrote a Nightcrawler miniseries. He wrote Marvel Divas, which was a miniseries, I think 4 issues, which focused on girls in the Marvel Universe, and Angel Revelations. And he's done a few Fantastic Four issues as well. And Tom Taylor. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention Tom Taylor. So he's a playwright as well, Melbourneian, Australian playwright. So he's done The Deep and Rombies for Gestalt. He's done a whole lot of Star Wars stuff most recently for Dark Horse in the last 3-4 years, the Star Wars Invasion series of miniseries, Blood Ties. He's got another one focusing on the death of Boba Fett. And he's got a Darth Maul miniseries coming up, which sounds pretty exciting, because Darth Maul is coming back in Clone Wars.
Yeah.
TV series. He's also done stuff for the Rocketeer Adventures, and he's written plays like The Example and short films like The Example, and A4 to A3, which I've never seen, but I believe it's about people falling in love in a copying facility or something. So, yeah, there's a couple of playwrights on my list right there, Robert Oguayasakasa and Tom Taylor.
Tom Taylor's a case where he's definitely moved into writing comics pretty much full-time now. He seems to have a steady stream of, you know, very high quality comics coming out, especially through Dark Horse, which is no small publisher. But some of these others just kind of dabble, I guess, in the field of comic writing. It's nice when you see ones who like, yes, I love doing this. Why didn't I do this before? Like Tom and Jeff Loeb, I suppose, would be the other example, because, you know, he really stuck with comics, didn't he? He didn't just write one, like, say, Michael Green, we mentioned before, and all these others who just like, it's not for me. I've got to get back to writing Green Lantern movies.
Screenwriting pays much, much more than comics could ever pay, I guess.
But is it more soul-destroying?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, the kind of concessions you have to make when writing a blockbuster film, I can imagine.
I think that's, I guess, the attraction for a lot of these guys is comics is a much smaller industry, and it's not so much death by committee as in Hollywood can be, as in forced rewrites and, you know, directors and actors demanding rewrites and stuffing up your script. I guess that can be, if you're not a Kevin Smith, you kind of, because his budgets are a lot lower than these guys, he can kind of do what he wants. But yeah, if you're working on a Green Lantern film or if you're working on Lost or whatever, I guess a lot of that stuff would be kind of tinkered with in an unsatisfying fashion. So I guess they can kind of have a lot more freedom with comics and actually have their unexpurgated, is that the right word, kind of creative ambitions spewed forth the page and just roam free. So there's a lot more freedom, I guess, in the comic industry, which I can understand. It must be frustrating at times working in Hollywood.
I can see the creative
appeal. Maybe one day we'll find out.
Complete tangent here. You brought up Darth Maul being brought back from the dead. Question, why wasn't the clone army of clone troopers made of Darth Mauls?
Ooh.
Emperor Palpatine.
Tom Taylor now.
You're doing it wrong. Your evil plan for galactic domination is missing a vital ingredient. Like, why did they
pick... Well, I mean, Darth Maul is
Is he too much of a loose cannon? Are they worried
that... They wanted a compliant, pliable, obedient soldiers, didn't they?
Well, yeah, so they picked a intergalactic rogue to fulfill that role, didn't they?
Well, his resume probably looks pretty good. He had good references, I'm sure.
But then again, like, okay, Boba Fett has a problem with disintegrating his captives.
Is it Boba or Boba?
I don't care. Has a problem with disintegrating his captives, which we've learnt. So obviously they're not that obedient. This is getting way too nerdy and Star Wars specific for my tastes.
Have you seen any of the Family Guy Star Wars movies? They're actually pretty good, especially if you know the dialogue and stuff.
I'm not very hot on Family Guy, to be honest.
Me neither, but these three films are pretty awesome.
I like the Robot Chicken ones.
I'd like to a video retailer. Really? No, that didn't do it for me.
What?
Family Guy's much better.
Your taste buds can't repel flavor of this magnitude.
That was a good one. Was that the Admiral Akbar cereal?
Yeah, that's it.
What was the cereal called?
It had a hilarious name. I can't remember. Watch that skit, people, online. Let's move on. There's a fair few celebrities who dabble into writing comics or ghostwriting.
Like Rosario Dawson?
Yeah, we'll get to that, I guess.
And the Ghost Whisperer?
Okay, shut up. We're getting to them. All right?
Okay.
Well, in Jennifer Love Hewitt's case, the ghost writing might be appropriate. With celebrity comics, I don't know if I assume that most comic fans are savvy enough to realize that a lot of them are probably written as a way to bid for movie deals. I know Rosario Dawson, you mentioned her just then. She's already got in plans to make and star in the adaptation of her comic Occult Crimes Task Force, Yeah, I know, right?
Shudder.
Very,
yes.
Very unlike BPRD or any number of comics and films like yes. that. But she's still looking for a studio, and I know a few others. Rashida Jones, you might recognize her from Parks and Recreation.
The Office.
And The Office. She, for Oni Press, she wrote a comic called Frenemy of the State, which is about...
Well, she wasn't bad. I read the first few issues. Yeah. I think she was one of like three or four writers on it.
Yeah, but, you can count on the ghostwriting there.
Often these guys will have, or girls will have, the concept and then hire writers to do
yeah.
it. Yeah.
But that's about basically like Chuck, that, you know, that the Unlikely Spy kind of TV show. And, yeah. Since there's a glut of spy-related TV shows out there right now, I wouldn't be surprised if this was kind of her way to go, hey, you know, I'm picturing myself in the lead role here. But yes. as you mentioned, the writing in that one is a lot better. I mean, the characterization, for one, is a lot more fulfilling on the page from what I've heard compared to these others. I mean, I've not heard anything about Rosario Dawson's comic. I know Tyrese Gibson, who I don't even think of him as being famous. But apparently he is. He wrote a comic
called
Mayhem.
He's in the Transformers movie.
That's the guy.
And,
Fast and Furious 5?
Death Race. Yeah, one of them. They're rebooting the Transformers films, by the way, and throwing out all the human cast. But, yes, he released a comic which was quite... It was very cheesy and bad. Like, this is from 1994 bad. It was just like an African-American Punisher who... Oh, I can't even remember what it was called, but
it's called Mayhem, and I should just describe the outfit. It's basically a Deathstroke or Deadshot looking outfit, like the same exact thing, right down to details. So, and his isn't an isolated case. I've noticed a lot of these ones written by celebrities is just how generic they are. It's just always a masked hero with guns, and they hunt criminals. And 99% of them are that.
I think the problem is that these celebrities just surrounded by yes men, or they haven't read a comic in years and years and years, so they just think, oh, I remember in 1987 when I read, you know, or they think that comic audiences aren't as smart as film or TV audiences. I don't know. But
I think it's probably you're right about them having not read a comic in a while, because I can imagine in their head it's like, yeah, okay, how about a superhero who actually kills the criminals? I'm like, there's lots of those.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess the publishers, I think Image published the Tyrese Gibson one, and I guess they know that their name is going to get interviews and is going to get copies sold and the new people come into the... I remember when I actually published, I think, on my blog years ago, the press release for Tyrese Gibson's comic, and it's still to this day the highest thing on my blog.
Unbelievable.
And I had all these, like, dozens and dozens of comments from all these different people, you know, who've never read comics. So
I can't imagine...
It sells. It's a marketing ploy.
I just can't imagine who his legion of fans are. Who are these people that get so excited about, you know, a 2-second performance in Transformers 2 from this guy? Or
I think he's a rapper as well. So
okay. Well, yeah. That would explain a lot.
I guess the ladies like him because he's masculine, got tattoos. So I don't know.
He's a handsome man. Yeah. But they reek of the kind of projects which the editors would throw in the dustbin and send you not even a politely worded rejection letter. But because they're celebrities. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They go, yeah, just go for it. Doesn't matter what happens in it.
Yeah.
Whereas it would be nicer if maybe the celebrities could put their egos aside and have an editor tell them, you can do better, you know. But it's like they think, wouldn't it be cool if I could play this guy who has two guns and a trench coat? I think they get as far as designing a costume and then can't really think of a plot. And that's what the ghostwriter's job is in this case. I know Mark Hamill wrote a comic called The Black Pearl. Mark Hamill, star of Luke Skywalker. but another Star Wars thing there. But his comic The Black Pearl, again, it's a gun-toting caped superhero. And this was back in 1996, I think. And he was promoting
that issue.
And he wanted to promote the idea of a film adaptation pretty much straight away, with himself as director. So that's one case where it definitely proves that rule that they're just shopping for roles.
Yeah.
There's lots of examples.
There's a whole bunch of musicians that have written comics, but that's a whole episode by itself.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one I wanted to bring up. Jared Way of My Chemical Romance.
Oh, yes.
Popular music band.
Yes.
So I've heard.
And they play guitars and such.
Now, he kind of stands out amongst all these examples for actually writing a pretty readable comic.
Yes, he's talented.
Yeah, and the Umbrella Academy, I remember when it came out, it had, the covers by James Jean, it had artwork by Gabriel Barr of the Fabio Moon Gabriel Barr twin partnership, Super Twins or whatever.
Powers activate.
Exactly. It was eye-catching, and I think people were expecting the worst and actually got, a pretty readable comic. I still think it's a bit overhyped.
It's pretty awesome.
A little bit overhyped.
Perhaps. Yeah. I know Grant Morrison loved it, but that's because it's kind of full of wild and crazy ideas. But it's actually quite a bold and enjoyable comic. I think there's been two miniseries so far, and I think the third has been announced ages ago but has yet to show up.
And Way's gone out of the way to say that he's a Grant Morrison fan, that he owes a lot to Doom Patrol. And you get that tone in the comic for sure.
True.
But apparently he was actually a former student of the School of Visual Arts to study comic storytelling and cartooning before he launched the band. Okay. So he has a bit of, cred and talent for writing comics. So it goes to show you should study what you're about to write before just throwing yourself into it.
Too true. Listen, celebrities.
The last celebrity I want to bring up, just because I found it hilarious, and I did mention her before, was Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yes.
Now, through IDW, who seem to love hiring celebrities, she's released a comic called Jennifer Love Hewitt's Music Box. Now, reading about this, I'm not exactly sure.
Sorry, lost interest.
Yeah, I know. It's a horror anthology series with a music box, which is kind of the uniting object between the stories. I'm not exactly reading up on it. I'm not exactly sure what she's done, because the writer on the series is Scott Lobdell, who is quite prolific and well known among comic
writers. A bunch of X-Men stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So I get the impression all she did was maybe come up with the name The Music Box, and then IDW put Jennifer Love Hewitt's in front of that. And, she came up with the premise.
Maybe posed for some alternate photo covers or something.
Like the Ghost Whisperer comics with the alternate photo covers, yeah. Cheesy, IDW, cheesy. But it just seems like one of those strange objects that's just going to be in a bargain bin very soon, or bought by people out of morbid curiosity and thrown away soon after.
Well, let's bring this thing up a notch and let's talk. I've got three or four novelists that I wanted to talk about, young Maladdin.
Go and do it.
Brad Meltzer, I think he followed Kevin Smith on Green Arrow for DC a few years ago. He wrote Justice League of America for 13 issues, and he wrote Identity Crisis, which is kind of famous or infamous. Have you actually read Identity Crisis, Maladdin?
Never. Is it the one where... where Superman goes, who am I? But who am I really? Lois?
No, nothing like that. It was kind of a lot of rape. Well, not a lot, one, if I recall, and deaths in it. But it was great art by Ray Morales and kind of a new note in the kind of the darkness of the DC universe. So this came out maybe, 5-6 years ago? I've got the... I think Josh Whedon actually wrote the introduction for it on the trade paperback. But, yeah, it's pretty awesome. I can't really say too much without spoiling if you haven't read it, but I really liked it, but not everybody does. So that's Brad Bell, who's also written, again, for Buffy Season 8 comics. And he's released a few books. One of his interesting ones, which I actually want to read, is called Book of Lies, and that connects the Cain and Abel story from the Bible to the murder of Jerry Siegel's father, Jerry Siegel, the co-creator of Superman. His father actually died. I think he was shot by a mug or something, and I think it went unsolved. So he actually kind of connects this history. He's really into his history and conspiracy. His last book was The Inner Circle, and he's currently hosting Brad Meltzer's Decoded on the History Channel, which has been running since 2010, and that's like a look at different conspiracies and stuff. So, yeah, so he hasn't done a lot of comics recently, but he's certainly done a fair few novels as well as comics. David Liss, he's written seven books since the year 2000, and again, they're kind of mystery thrillers, such as A Conspiracy of Paper and The Ethical Assassin. His newest one is The 12th Enchantment. And he has only written, I think, a few issues of Black Panther when it got relaunched after Daredevil left, and then Black Panther took over and became the Man Without Fear series. So that was launched from issue 513 to issue 529, which just came out a couple of weeks ago, which is the last issue of that series starring Black Panther, which I've got all those issues, and actually pretty good. It's like Black Panther loses his powers and he goes into Hell's Kitchen to replace Daredevil, who was having a bit of a crisis of faith or whatever. So, yeah, it's actually a pretty good series. So I recommend picking that one up when that gets collected. So that's David Liss. Lastly, a father and son team. Do you know who that would be, Aladdin?
No.
Stephen King and Joe Hill.
That's his son?
Yes.
Okay, wait, back up. Tell me more. What?
I guess he changed his name or whatever. Stephen King is, I think he's written quite a few, well, the odd comic every now and then, but yeah, I don't think he's done anything with any regularity. The most recent, the first collaboration actually is called Road Rage Throttle, and that's being released, I think the last, it's a two-issue miniseries. The first issue just got released from IDW, I believe, and then second to last issue will be released in March, and that's based on a short story that they wrote a while ago, and that's going to be followed up also by them called Road Rage Duel, and that's based on the classic Richard Matheson short story, which Steven Spielberg turned into a film. Was that Spielberg's second film, I think, or first film? Anyway, so that's
Richard Matheson, writer of I Am Legend, I believe.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
So that follows in April and May, and actually that's the first collaboration. Stephen King has had a kind of interesting relation with comics, especially over the last couple of years. The Stand has been published by Marvel since 2008, and the six trade paperbacks collecting the six miniseries so far. It's overseen by King, by written by that guy that I mentioned before, Robert Aguayo Sacasa. So he actually does the writing under Stephen King's supervision. Stephen King also wrote backup tales for the first issue, five issues of Vertigo Comics' American Vampire. And that was his first original comics work, because in the first work that wasn't adapted by one of his stories. And The Dark Tower is obviously the other big one. That's had nine trade paperbacks released since 2007, based on Stephen King's Dark books. The comics are actually written by Robin Firth and Peter David. Which brings me to a nice segue. Peter David, I'm a big fan of, he wrote The Incredible Hulk for 12 years, he wrote Aquaman, he wrote a whole bunch of other stuff. He's actually had his novel career rising up at the same time that his comic career started, so in the late 80s, early 90s. So he's written a whole bunch of Star Trek novels. Most notably, he started the Star Trek New Frontier series of novels, which I read the first two of, and are pretty good. And I think he released the last one last year. So it's interesting, I was actually reading an interview with him, and he's saying that he focuses on, he does his novel writing in the morning and his comics writing in the afternoon. But going back to Joe Hill, he's also got, I believe, from IDW, the Lock and Key series of comics as well, which is a horror supernatural, which I actually haven't read of, but apparently are pretty good. That's all I got.
Okay. I mean, keeping with the horror writers, one more occurred to me when you mentioned Stephen King, which is Clive Barker. Barker has been involved with quite a few comics in the early 90s, especially for Marvel and Dark Horse. See, he wasn't on my...
The Ectoplasm or something?
That's right. There was a whole bunch of Clive Barker Presents comics. And Ecto Kid, that rings a bell.
Ecto Kid.
That was through Marvel. There was one that I know he wrote, or at least was one of the writers for, which you never know what that means these days, but that was called Primal. This was for Dark Horse Comics back in 93, thereabouts, and it was like a one-shot OGN, and it was as depressing and horrific as most Clive Barker novels. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of his writing, but those who are, this comic's probably worth checking out, because it definitely fits in his aesthetic, and the artwork's fantastic. It's by John Van Fleet, who did a lot of like painted artwork back in the early 90s, you know, when every second Vertigo comic was painted, fully painted. So it fits in nicely with that era, which sadly is kind of gone, but digital colouring keeps getting better and better, so we might get there again soon enough.
True. But, I guess, as I mentioned, Star Trek, I know Leonard Nimoy, William Shatner have also released comics over the years. William Shatner's had comics released on, like, the Tech War series of books that he's written or co-written over the years. I think the Blue Water been publishing his comics for the last few years. Leonard Nimoy briefly had a comic from Valiant, I think, called The Primordials or something about dinosaur sci-fi. I can't remember. Mm. And who's the actor who played Chekhov? I think he's written a few comics as well.
Walter Koenig,
yes. And, yeah, I think he's writing, the future or things yet to come or something. Mm. Yeah, he's got a current series through Blue Water as well, if memory serves me correctly. Oh, look, I'm sure there's quite a few more. I mean, yeah, we could probably do a whole episode on celebrities.
On Star Trek-related comics. But, I mean, yes. as an overall thought, it is like a mixed bag. You can see where you can usually tell the ones where they don't have a lot of interest in what it is. It's just a chance for them to have their name on something or like a little ego stroke
vanity project.
Yeah, vanity project. And then there's the ones which you feel, oh, okay, they've been kicking this around in their head for a long time and they want to make it as good as possible in, say, the Gerard Way example.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, lots of other screenwriters more so seem to know this is what's expected of me because me being Jennifer Love Hewitt isn't enough to sell comic books.
Correct. Yes, you're right. Well, if you've got any other examples, people, please let us know on Facebook or shoot us an email, chris@extrasequential.com. As always, we welcome your comments, things we can improve, things we can stop talking about. I don't know, things we can talk about more.
Yeah, if you want us like to stop talking about more, Kevin Smith, let us know. I'm sick of that.
Please, I'll delete that. No, that's fine.
You have no power to it.
But if you have any suggestions for the show as well, you're more than welcome to let us know. As always, not all future shows. That would be silly. Well, no, I guess so. But all past shows, at least, are available on extrasequential.com and links there on so you can download and listen to us.
I'm done.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Music from the show is available at... What is it?
PurgeAudit.com. Thank you. There's a music video there that you should check out. Good times.
Yes, it's actually good. It's got a rapping in it. And Aladdin's quite a good rapper.
Rapping. Rap.
That's from an awesome TV series called Look Around You, People, which two series have been released thus far. Oh. And you should definitely watch it. Right,
Aladdin? Great show. Yeah. BBC show. Track that one down for hours of laughter.
Yes.
Good humoured jollity. All right. Thanks, folks. You'll hear us next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.